still strong on environmentalists.
Well, Leonard Peltier, I want to say thank you so much for inviting us into your home. I'm so glad we're not coming to a prison.
Well, so am I.
Indigenous leader Leonard Peltier at his home on the Turtle Mountain Reservation in North Dakota on his 81st birthday weekend. Special thanks to Charina Nadura, Sam Malkoff, Dennis Moynihan, Mike Burke, and to you observant ones, to my pop Zazu, the news hun. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and on the web at kfai.org.
You are listening to North Star Stories, Voices from Where We Live, a daily newscast about what it means to live in Minnesota.
Today, a Minnesota mayor faces felony theft charges. Then, why a Minnesota grassland feels quieter. And the state wants to hear from the Latina community. I'm Chantel Sings. A mayor of a small town in northern Minnesota is accused of using his knowledge to avoid paying fees for a second water line on his property for more than 10 years. According to Amper Station KAXE, the mayor of Keewatin now faces felony theft charges. Authorities say that as former city crew supervisor, the mayor knew how to turn the water on and off on his own for the second part of his double lot. Normally, a resident would have to pay $100 every time the city turns the water on or off, plus an additional $10 a month. The mayor denies the allegation, saying the city is at fault for failing to bill him. The case is scheduled to go to court in October. In today's main story, half of all grassland birds have disappeared in the last 50 years. In Minnesota, researchers are working with landowners to understand why. Maya Hecht has more.
Seasons may not sound the same as they used to. Human-caused destruction of bird habitat in Minnesota and beyond means that as our landscapes change, bird populations and the sound of outdoor spaces are changing with them.
The bird populations as a whole have declined by 30% in the last 50 years.
Mike Worland is a wildlife biologist with the Department of Natural Resources.
For grassland birds specifically, it's 50% in the last 50 years. So their populations have been cut in half within my lifetime.
This statistic, pulled from recent research by the American Association for the Advancement of Science, indicates large-scale ecosystem disruption beyond just bird populations.
Huge forces are at work causing these population trends, and overcoming them is not a small thing.
Those forces include everything from climate change to pesticide use to human infrastructure development. In exchange for our modern human habitats, birds are losing theirs. One such habitat is Minnesota's native oak savanna.
It's a unique ecosystem. It's beautiful.
Dana Burtness runs Nettle Valley Farm in southeastern Minnesota's Driftless region, a biodiversity hotspot historically characterized by open prairie dotted with large oak trees.
When we first bought our farm, it was a lot of clogged woods, just full of invasive species, and we're slowly but surely nudging it back towards more of an oak savanna silvopasture system.
Silvopasture is a technique that integrates trees and livestock on the same land, helping the ecosystem become
one that functions for birds and wildlife and insects, but also can be grazed by livestock. And as soon as we started doing that, we started seeing a lot more red-headed woodpeckers on our land.
Earlier this year, Dana's farm participated in the University of Minnesota's Sounds of Nature project.
We wanted to be part of the citizen science project because, who knows, maybe that would help get more answers about why that is.
The bird song heard on her land, and many others across the state, was recorded into a data set seeking to compare avian populations across public and private lands.
The interventions that we're doing in our valley, from my perspective, has increased the amount of life in the valley, but it would be kind of neat to have that data.
The Sounds of Nature project recently completed its pilot data collection season.
This new technology of using recorders to monitor birds, I think, has huge potential.
And that potential depends on public involvement. Biologist Mike Worland said,
one thing I really like about it is engagement with citizens. That's a huge benefit, just getting people engaged in birds and in conservation.
Maya Hecht for North Star Stories.
You are listening to North Star Stories. The Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs, or MCLA, is surveying Latina communities across the state. The survey seeks input from all Latinas living in Minnesota, regardless of citizenship status, language, or age. The council is working with the state agency that is required to protect data privacy, and no identifying information will be collected or shared. The goal is to use this information to advocate for policies, programs, and funding for Latinas in the state. Recommendations will be shared with government leaders and state agencies. The survey is open through November 30th and can be found at the MCLA website.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's broadcast, a drug bust in North Central Minnesota is making national news, but not because of the drugs. Then, a Minnesota team is making headlines on basketball courts, and why you might be seeing more purple around the state this month. I'm Gracie J. Police always have to prepare for the unexpected, but Itasca County Sheriff's deputies got quite the surprise recently serving a search warrant. Officials searching a home in Deer River in north central Minnesota found drugs, a gun, and several exotic and dangerous animals. According to TV station Northern News Now, officers confiscated cobras, a green mamba, a boa constrictor, tarantulas, and other venomous species. Authorities say some of the animals are illegal to possess in the state without the proper permits. Officers arrested a 39-year-old woman and a 34-year-old man from central Minnesota during the search. Next, the Minnesota Lynx entered the WNBA playoffs with the top seed and home court advantage this season. Mick Finnegan takes a look back at the season and the keys to their success.
The Minnesota Lynx have clinched the number one seed in the playoffs after a dominant WNBA season.
Yeah, it's been a fun year.
Naomi is a longtime Lynx fan who watches away games at a bar of their own in Minneapolis. She saw her first WNBA game in 2015.
And I was kind of reluctantly like, I should go support women. That game, Maya Moore scored, I think, 48 points. And after that one game, I told my husband I wanted to get season tickets.
Head coach Cheryl Reeve has led the team through the last 16 seasons, winning championships in 2011, 13, 15, and 17, solidifying the Lynx as a dynasty franchise.
But, you know, I always just trust Cheryl Reeve to make all of these decisions that I don't usually understand, but usually work out.
Broadcast analyst Leah B. Olson credits Cheryl Reeve's ability to build a championship-ready team to her intelligence.
She is just so aware of all facets of women's basketball, and it just shows up in how she selects players.
While previous championship teams were built around four or five superstars, this Lynx team is built around Nafisa Collier.
I personally think she is the most valuable player in the league, but I see why sometimes not everybody sees that, because she's very understated. And then you look at the stat sheet and you'll be like, wow, she did like everything tonight.
Collier is looking to win her first WNBA championship this season after a devastating loss in the finals last year to the New York Liberty.
She's represented Lynx basketball in this kind of championship pedigree, yeah, but has yet to get one of those for her own.
Olson has been an analyst with the Lynx for the last 15 years and with the team in other capacities since day one. She says Coach Reeve selects players with a team mentality.
And they really trust each other. Everybody has the same mindset of, I have to play for the person next to me. And if we all do that, we can be successful.
While Nafisa Collier stands out, players like forward Alana Smith are in conversations for awards like Defensive Player of the Year after the season she has had.
This to me may be Coach Reeve's greatest coaching, because of, I feel like she's just getting regular players to play at an elite level.
Bench players for the Lynx have made a huge impact this season as well.
And what's difficult, I think, about coming off the bench is that you have to come in and you have to be good immediately. I'm probably most impressed with the rise of Natisha Heidemann.
Heidemann is half of the point guard duo nicknamed the Stud Buds with teammate Courtney Williams. They are getting recognition on and off the court for their friendship and flair.
I don't think any team in the WNBA is really intimidated by the Lynx, but the Lynx just come in very nicely and just kind of destroy teams.
The semifinals will begin Sunday, September 21st. The first round is a three-game series, semifinals is five games, and for the first time this year, the championship series will be seven games from October 3rd through 17th.
Go Lynx!
For North Star Stories, this is Mick Finnegan.
You are listening to North Star Stories.
Well, September is Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, and the Minnesota Department of Health is calling on communities to join the effort. Officials encourage Minnesotans to light up purple throughout the month to honor lives lost and show support for those affected by suicide. Health leaders say this month is a reminder that suicide prevention is important year-round and that hope and healing are always possible. If you or someone you know is struggling, call or text 988 to connect with the Minnesota Lifeline. Help is available 24/7.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Why employees in Minnesota can refuse to attend a mandatory meeting at work. Then, those who fought secretly for the U.S. military in Vietnam earn long-awaited veteran status in our state. And a reminder about the importance of getting well water tested. I'm Chantel Sames. An appeals court has ruled that Minnesota employees have the right to refuse to attend a meeting if their employer is pushing a political or religious view or trying to discourage them from unionizing. Some employers filed a lawsuit challenging the law that the state legislature passed 2 years ago. The court ruled 2-1 that the lawsuit could not proceed because no state enforcement action had been taken, rendering the case hypothetical. Minnesota's attorney general called the ruling a win for working people, saying the law protects employees from being punished for refusing political, religious, or anti-union meetings. Next, earlier this year, Minnesota lawmakers granted official veteran benefits to Hmong veterans who served in the Secret War. What does that mean for these veterans and their communities? Reporter Jamad Jama has the story.
Today marks a historic moment for Minnesota. We are proud to include a provision that officially recognizes the service Special Guerrilla Unit who fought alongside U.S. forces during the Secret War in Laos.
This spring, Minnesota lawmakers made the landmark decision to recognize Hmong veterans known as Special Guerrilla Units, or SGUs, who served with American forces during the Secret War, a covert conflict that happened at the same time as the Vietnam War. Representative Jay Shong, co-chair of the House Veterans and Military Affairs Division and a sponsor of the bill, went on to explain why this step is so meaningful.
And so recognizing the SGUs isn't just symbolic, it's a long overdue act of respect and a critical step toward equitable veteran support.
The bill recognizes them as veterans today, but their story goes back decades to the Secret War. Many of these veterans were recruited as teenagers and young boys, and their experiences were rarely acknowledged for years.
My name is Mai Huzel. I am the executive director of Hmong Museum. This was considered a secret war because it was a war that was not sanctioned by Congress. It was the result of the United States going into Laos and trying to get some support there for the Vietnam War.
These Hmong soldiers, sometimes as young as 10, were usually on the front lines of a covert conflict, facing extreme risk, hunger, and danger.
Many of the Hmong soldiers ended up being killed. Those who survived the Special Guerrilla Unit are some of the youngest soldiers at that time. It was secret. It wasn't really sanctioned. But yet, it is the Hmong people whose people were sacrificed.
These soldiers fought on behalf of the United States, often expecting that the U.S. would provide benefits or long-term help in return.
They helped a lot with the American effort, and yet they were not being recognized for the work that they did.
I was one of the 37 Hmong pilots trained by the United States Air Force during the Secret War in Laos. Despite our vital contribution, we Hmong veterans have never granted a full recognition we deserve.
That's veteran Yali, who testified on behalf of the bill passing in April. Of 37 pilots trained back in the early 70s, only 10 are alive today. Lee is one of them.
We carry not only the scar of battle, but the burden of being forgotten.
The bill officially passed in April of 2025, giving Secret War veterans recognition under Minnesota state law. Some of these benefits include getting special designations on their driver's licenses, veteran burial ceremonies, and grave markers. Ultimately, the legislature created an advisory task force that will determine eligibility criteria. For North Star Stories, I'm Jamad Jama.
You are listening to North Star Stories. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture, or MDA, offered free well water testing at Farm Fest earlier this month. During the three-day festival near Marshall in southwest Minnesota, MDA staff tested 107 private wells. More than a dozen safety concerns were detected. MDA officials say unsafe nitrate levels can threaten infants and pregnant women, and they cannot be detected by taste or smell. About 3 in 4 Minnesotans rely on wells for their drinking water. Community groups interested in hosting free well testing should contact the state's Department of Agriculture.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
The city of Ely is one step closer to requiring police officers to wear body cameras. Then, a move by the federal government that could impact the state's solar energy goals. And Governor Walz tries to make it easier for Minnesotans to get COVID-19 vaccines. I'm Gracie J. The police department in Ely in northeastern Minnesota is considering the pros and cons of officers wearing body cameras. A statement released by the city says it's considering implementing body-worn cameras in the near future. Statement goes on to say that state law requires the city to solicit comments from the public before purchasing or implementing a portable recording system. A draft of the police department's proposed body-worn camera policy is available on the City of Ely's website. The city is accepting public comments on the topic through October 2nd. In today's main story, the Minnesota Department of Commerce is challenging a federal decision to cancel millions in grants for solar energy projects. Jose Osoria tells us how the move could affect the state's energy goals.
New program called Solar for All. It will award grants, 60 grants across the country, just to develop programs that enable low-income and disadvantaged communities to benefit from residential solar power.
In April of 2024, then-President Biden announced a $7 billion Solar for All grant program to fund residential solar projects, including here in Minnesota. However, in August of 2025, under the Trump administration, EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin announced the termination of the program.
The new law eliminates billions of green slush fund dollars by repealing the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, including a $7 billion program called Solar for All.
All this in accordance with President Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill. The actions by the current EPA have a significant impact on plans that were underway here in Minnesota.
We've been hard at work getting ready to put the funds out into the field.
Lisa Polish is Assistant Commissioner with Minnesota's Department of Commerce. She says the Minnesota Department of Commerce has a clear vision of how to utilize the $62 million earmarked by the Solar for All program.
We've been working closely with partners at the Minnesota Climate Innovation Finance Authority, which is the new state green bank, to make funds available to advance community solar gardens.
Community solar gardens offer Minnesotans the opportunity to access solar energy without installing a system at their home.
But the bottom line again is this: EPA no longer has the authority to administer the program.
That's EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin again. In his August 2025 press conference, he also said that the EPA is committed to the rule of law and to serving as good stewards of taxpayer dollars. Pete Wyckoff, the Deputy Commissioner of Energy and Resources with the Minnesota Department of Commerce, believes that the actions by the EPA actually violate the law.
New administration has been very different in ways that we find to be contrary to the law.
Mr. Wyckoff says that the state of Minnesota has a binding contract for these funds. He also points out the Trump administration is ignoring established government norms and breaking that binding contract.
It is not something that's ever been considered for the federal government to try to break a contract. Past administrations have been very clear that legally binding contracts entered by the previous administration would continue to be honored.
Ms. Polish says the Solar for All program would go a long way to help Minnesotans who truly need it.
Focus on low-income and disadvantaged households and help ensure that they save 20% on their energy bills, which for an average household could be $250 to $300 a year.
She also points out that Minnesota will challenge the EPA's decision.
We will be part of a legal action. We're working closely with the Attorney General's office to understand what our options are.
We reached out to the Minnesota Attorney General's office. They declined to comment on this story. For North Star Stories, I'm Jose Osoria.
You are listening to North Star Stories.
Governor Walz has issued an executive order that provides healthcare providers and pharmacists greater flexibility to provide COVID-19 vaccines. The move comes in response to the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services recommending that the vaccine be limited to those 65 and over or having other complicating health factors. Unlike other states, pharmacists in Minnesota can administer a flu or COVID vaccine, according to the Food and Drug Administration license, to anyone 3 years old and up without the requirement of a prescription. The new COVID-19 vaccines are now available at many pharmacies and healthcare providers.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Minnesota's Washington delegation honors the state's school shooting victims on the Senate floor. Then, a ban on a gun device triggers a bigger question about legislation. And Democrats in the Minnesota House of Representatives have elected a new leader. I'm Chantel Sings. U.S. Senators Amy Klobuchar and Tina Smith, Democrats from Minnesota, honored the victims and survivors of the Annunciation Catholic Church and school shooting in public remarks on the Senate floor. The senators' comments followed a resolution by the full state delegation condemning the attack, remembering the two children killed, and recognizing the courage of first responders and community members who acted quickly. Lawmakers pledged support for the 21 people injured and praised the Annunciation community for its resilience. They said the resolution makes clear that violence has no place in schools or houses of worship. Next, Minnesota lawmakers banned binary triggers last year after they were used in two high-profile shootings of police officers. The move has lawmakers and advocates questioning the legislative process. This story starts with a sound of gunfire that some listeners may find difficult to hear, but it demonstrates the firing rate of binary triggers and why they've become such a focus of debate. Zan Holston has more.
In July of 2023, a gunman opened fire on police officers in Fargo, North Dakota, killing one and injuring two other officers and a civilian.
Central, we got shots fired! Central, we got shots fired!
Police believe they were being shot at with a machine gun, capable of continuously firing bullets as long as the trigger is being held.
Central, we got a man with an AK-47, he's shooting at us. We're at...
But the shooter wasn't firing a machine gun. His rifle had been modified with a binary trigger, a device that allows guns to shoot one round when the trigger is pulled and another when the trigger is released, effectively doubling the rate of fire of a semi-automatic gun. Last May, the Minnesota legislature passed a law that banned binary triggers.
Binary triggers have been used in several tragic shootings, including an officer in Fargo, and of course, the first responder and two officers in Burnsville.
That's Senator Heather Gustafson, a Democrat representing the Twin Cities northern suburbs, talking about the new law last June. In addition to the Fargo incident, she referenced a 2024 shooting in Burnsville that killed two police officers and a paramedic.
They are unnecessary. They are dangerous. Banning them will help make our community safer.
But a Minnesota district court has since struck down the ban on binary triggers because of how the legislature enacted the law. During last year's legislative session, the House passed a bill on binary triggers, but the Senate failed to pass its version. Instead, on the last day of the session with no time for debate, DFL leaders tacked it onto a giant bill, known as an omnibus bill, that was supposed to deal with taxes. A gun rights organization sued the state, and a Ramsey County judge ruled that the DFL violated the single subject and title clause by including the binary trigger provision in the giant tax bill. That clause requires that a bill's title and its contents address the same, or at least related, subjects.
There were DFL votes who didn't want to vote for it. They thought it would make them vulnerable. But when you bunch it all together in a giant bill, it gives them plenty of political cover.
Rob Doerr, senior vice president at the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, a group that sued the state over the single subject violation. Doerr said his group isn't necessarily fighting for the devices themselves.
They're essentially range toys. You know, there's not a ton of practical value.
What he said they object to is lawmakers using an omnibus bill to push through legislation that didn't have enough support to pass on its own.
What's unfair is just packaging everything together into a take-it-or-leave-it bill and pushing it through with, you know, literally no time for anybody to read or understand, let alone offer amendments to it.
The giant omnibus bill in question didn't just cover taxes. It also included provisions on higher education, transportation, and other unrelated policy areas. The judge only struck down the binary trigger ban, but he warned that similar challenges could jeopardize other laws passed the same way. Now the state faces a tough decision. Governor Tim Walz said they plan to appeal, but some worry that could put everything in the bill at risk.
If they want to roll the dice, it could be the entire bill that goes down, not just this one provision.
For North Star Stories, I'm Zan Holston.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Fourth-term Representative Zach Stevenson will serve as the next leader of the Democratic Party in the Minnesota House of Representatives. Stevenson fills the vacancy created by the assassination of Melissa Hortman, who led the Democrats in the House since 2017. The new leader for the Democrats is known in part for his role in helping to legalize recreational cannabis. Stevenson represents the Coon Rapids area, a northern suburb of the Twin Cities.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Welcome to Minnesota Native News. I'm Murray Rock. This week, we're sharing a special extended conversation with voices you've heard in earlier reports. Here's Emma Needham's interview with Corina Berry and Holly Cook Marcaro of Indian Collective.
I just wanted to thank you both for your time and energy talking about this really exciting story.
Wabushu, Wabininudi Nikwe, Indigenous Anishinaabe Hmong, Makwa Indudim, Gazaka Squatchime Kag and Dunjaba. My name is Corina Berry. I am Leech Lake Anishinaabe, calling in from St. Paul, Minnesota today. I am the Managing Director of Indian Action with Indian Collective. Miigwech for having me.
Thank you. Ani Mbuju, Holly Kupakaro. I'm from the Red Lake Band of Ojibwe in Northern Minnesota, and I do government affairs for Indian Collective.
Thank you for that. I was wondering for our listeners if you might be able to give a little background information on what's the difference between like a pardon, clemency, and how one would define commutation of a sentence.
Clemency, it's a pardon, a commutation, a reprieve. A commutation merely commutes the remainder of a sentence to time served and then allows them to go free. So the terms of Leonard's grant of executive clemency was a commutation of the remainder of a sentence, but with the requirement that he serve out the remainder of a sentence in home confinement. It is for the remainder of his life. So he's in his 49th year from prison. It would have been 50 years on March 2nd of 2025. He was one of three principally charged with the murders of Agents Kohler and Williams. When the government's case fell apart, they changed the charges for Leonard, and he was convicted of aiding and abetting. His trial was separate from Dino Butler and Bob Rubidoux, the two who were principally charged. In their trial, they were found not guilty for reasons of self-defense. And then Leonard was convicted of aiding and abetting them, which was always one of our principal arguments about the justice in this case, that who did he aid and abet if those who were principally charged were found not guilty? When he was convicted, there's always been charges of the racism of the judge in this instance, from what he allowed and didn't allow in trial, and then the fact that he sentenced Leonard to two consecutive life sentences, not to run concurrently.
Thank you for explaining that. Corina, did you have anything to add to that?
Just highlighting the levels of injustice, you know, related to Leonard's case and ongoing imprisonment. We're still sorting out why he has to serve another 30 days when he's very unwell. And then, like Holly said, then the home confinement piece. So I think there's still layers here of sorting through what is justice.
What does Leonard Peltier have to face now?
Once he returns to his homelands of Turtle Mountain and then he's in his home, like what is the extent of that home confinement? He can go home and like that is freedom for him. You know, that's enough and absolutely honor that. But there is still a piece of his freedom that they're trying to hold in keeping him confined at home. People might not know or understand the level of institutionalization, isolation that Leonard has experienced being incarcerated in prison for nearly 5 decades. And then for him to be released and to experience a completely different world in many ways, so much has changed that coming out is going to be just one massive overstimulating experience. What does that spiritual and cultural support look like for him on top of the medical care that he needs?
What is one thing about Leonard Peltier's case that you'd like to share?
The understanding reality that this has been a multi-generational fight. Multiple generations, literally, that have fought for his freedom and to bring truth to the injustice that he's been living through. I have a 2-year-old daughter, Miss Guanes. Summer or two ago, you know, I'm like with Holly and our team and I had her strapped on me in a baby carrier and we're in front of the White House doing an action. When I picked her up yesterday, I was able to tell her as now a little over a 2-year-old, like, hey, Uncle Leonard's coming home and you are a part of that. Like she is a part of the last generation that fought for his freedom.
There's so much with Leonard, right? the thing that has stood out to me as I've gotten to know Leonard over these past years, being part of his advocacy team, is his persistent optimism, even though we had some serious setbacks. And Leonard has remained hopeful for nearly 5 decades. And I think that's an example both for how to lead and stand by what you believe in.
That's all we have for this week's episode. Join us next time for more voices and stories that inform, uplift, and shape our communities right here on Minnesota Native News. Minnesota.